The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Okay, we all know that Game of Thrones is over. It has been the most talked about TV series in recent times. Now, we're going to talk about the conclusion to it, and I know there are some of you out there who may not have seen the final episode yet. There are some of you who may be a few series behind who are trying to catch up, so maybe you don't want to listen to us for the next 10 minutes or so. And I shouldn't be saying that because I don't want listeners turning off or going elsewhere. But look, we have to talk about it. I mean, it'd be like saying, you know, that there was the FA Cup final last Saturday. We're not going to talk about the outcome of Manchester City and Watford in case you've recorded the match and want to watch it later. Look, it's over. It's happened. We're going to discuss it. And I think it's fair to say, Alison Healy, I know you're a massive fan of Game of Thrones, unlike Jennifer Gannon here, who wouldn't be as big a fan, but you must be surely disappointed, like all the other diehards are, about the way this epic petered out.
Well, Matt, you just finished your beautiful introduction there by slamming your pen on the table and taking off your glasses. So things are obviously getting serious. And that's exactly what I did when I watched it at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, Sunday into Monday. I slammed down my phone and I took off my glasses and I just stared slack-jawed at the television screen.
Thinking, for good or for bad?
For bad.
Because you're going to miss it?
Not anymore.
because you were disappointed by the way it finished.
Not anymore. I was really rooting for this season.
Yeah, you were actually in favour of the early episodes. You were the only person around the office who was enjoying it.
Yeah, I even asked you at one stage, you know, what does your daughter think? Am I with the kids on this? Am I totally alone? Because when you go in on the internet after an episode of Game of Thrones, it's not pretty. They're tearing it to shreds, especially the latest episodes. 1 to 7, seasons 1 to 7 have been hailed as some of the greatest television ever made. You'd be hard pressed to argue against it if that's your type of thing. But season 8 really made you work for it. And I hung in there. I hung in there hoping that it would somehow resolve itself in, you know, an hour and a half of television for that final episode, which was an absolutely, looking back now, stupid dream. It was a pipe dream. It ended horrifically. Everything you didn't want to have happen happened. It was written awfully. The CGI was it should have been reported as some sort of crime against television. You know, it, without the books, they've been writing now without the books as guidance for so long.
This is Benioff and Weiss.
Yes, without the beloved words of George R. R. Martin, who penned the books, he didn't finish in time. I remember hearing that at the time and I thought, this isn't good. This is not good. And not good is a compliment to how this show ended. It is the most horrific piece of television I've ever seen.
Whoa. Right, that's a big vault fast on your part. Now, I have to admit, Jennifer, I've been influenced by a 16-year-old daughter, a bit of an Game of Thrones obsessive, who adored Series 1 to 7, was looking forward so much to Series 8, and is now disgusted that the whole thing was rushed and was of the view, and I think a lot of people are of this, that there was actually enough material, if handled properly, to make 2 extra series, to make this series and another one, to play everything out properly. And I can't believe they didn't do that, because I would have thought HBO would have wanted to rake in all the money from making 2 series instead of one.
Their eyes are off the prize, because David Benioff and T.B. Weiss are moving on to Star Wars. So they're going to handle the Star Wars franchise. Ooh. And if they put their hands on my Wookiees, there will be murder. Or Adam Driver, there will be murder. Because now that they've, you know, successfully, according to fans anyway, have ruined one unbelievable global phenomenon, are they going to go ahead, stream ahead, and ruin another?
Hang on, they didn't rush Game of Thrones just to get onto another job.
They were ready
they?
To be done. They said that they were going to be as far away from the internet and planet Earth as possible when the finale was going out, because they had signed all the contracts to do Star Wars. They were ready to just wrap up Game of Thrones, get it done. So, and also what they have now is a splinter kind of whole other universe to explore, where they have all these spin-offs, the Game of Thrones spin-offs, and that's what they're thinking of next. Where is the money going to come from next? And I think the other thing about it is, as we know with nerd culture, there is a strain of obsessive fans that will never be satisfied no matter what way anything is written. I mean, unless you're going to do something like Black Mirror, Bandersnatch, where everybody has like a million different endings and everyone gets to choose their own ending, you'll never ever satisfy people. I mean, there's guys on Twitter that are actually berating actual Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, saying that they're, you know, denying his true investment in Star Wars. Like, there's people that are that mad. And these people that are that mad, 1 million of them joined together to sign a petition to say they want to get the final series of Game of Thrones redone by competent writers.
1.5 million. And I'm only like 500,000 of those.
I mean, I do understand their frustrations. Don't get me wrong. But like, it's really, like, we've all seen, you know, it's not the, as in, there has been TV shows that have ended really disappointingly. We've all seen Gilmore Girls. Let's not go back there.
True story.
And, you know, I think the fandom, if they're let down by the final season, it is the showrunner's fault because they are, you know, focused on something completely different where they can make more money.
I want to get to listener comments. But before we do, I just want to play a little bit of the cast lamenting the end of Game of Thrones. And we should emphasise that this contains strong adult language.
When it's all said and done, I'll miss the dynamic of the show, because there's nothing like this show.
I mean, Game of Thrones means my 20s.
I started this job when I was 22, and I am not 22 anymore.
Game of Thrones is my entire career. I think I am going to have a hard time saying goodbye to Sam.
It's going to be very hard to say goodbye to Paid Tyrion.
I will miss simple things like walking on to set for the first time each year in your new bits of costume and just knowing you're part of something which is sort of at the centre of attention.
Yeah, it's going to be very strange without it. It's been 8 years.
I'll tell you what I won't miss. Walking around with half a fucking beard 3/4 of the year.
Okay, listener comments on Game of Thrones. The last few episodes were such a disappointment. The creators clearly rushed the end so they could go do other projects like Star Wars. HBO supposedly offered 10 episodes, but they said they could get it done in 6. 4 more episodes to flesh out the stories like The Night King, Dany going mad and Jon struggling to kill her would have made it much, much better. Right, we have so many coming in at this stage.
Can I just ask a question, right? We talked at length about spoiler alerts and the security measures that these big, massive money-making shows employed, like retina eye scans to get into the writers' rooms and everything. So if they put that much investment and anti-drone devices and all that into protecting the plot lines, you imagine that they put that...
Dan says the romantic plot lines in season 8 of Game of Thrones were laughable.
I mean, people expected, you know, because there had been all those massive twists within it, they expected something. They expected the unexpected and it went out with a whimper. But it gave fans exactly what they want. And exactly what they want is endlessly forensic discussions until the end of time about this TV show. And that's what it's given people. So, I mean, if they're just going to be arguing in cyberspace forevermore, that's all they want.
Listener says, sounds like the writers will be perfect for the ridiculously badly written and badly scripted intelligence offending Star Wars.
Excuse me.
Agreed.
Guys, the final episode was excellent. This is Game of Thrones. Nothing ever turns out how you expect. George R.R. Martin definitely had the final say in how it ended, for sure.
That sounds suspiciously like a text that our Dave Moore from Dermot and Dave fame would send. He was one of the only people that I know that liked this, and I think he was just saying that to be controversial. I haven't met one single person who said that fulfilled every box tick, and it was never going to fulfil any box. But
are we not just big babies now?
No.
We just want everything.
I want my money
way.
Back. I want
it's
my
like,
money back.
You know what?
You
it's
invested
fine.
In this. You invested years of your life.
And my bleeding money. I signed up to a subscription service I'll never watch again. And they have me in for 3 months now.
A lot of groupthink about Game of Thrones now because more people are saying it online. I rewatched season 6 and 7 before it started. It drops off a cliff after season 6. The writing, the pacing, the travelling from one end of Westeros to the other in a couple of days when it took months in previous seasons. That's why I'm not too disappointed in season 8. I expected it, and anyone paying attention should have expected it, says TC in Dublin.
Anybody
Another
who's watched
one?
David Benioff's previous works would expect it as well, because like all he does is rip off the Iliad time and time again. He's a terrible writer. Why do they keep hiring him?
It was like a Disney movie at the end, all lovey-dovey.
No, it well, no.
Did someone kiss a dragon? That's all we
Hang
care
on a
about.
Second. Oh God, it was so bad.
Dragon
it was so
and
bad.
Dragon love.
I'm still trying to have this conversation without spoiler alerting people. But like at one stage, a bad CGI dragon picks up a dead person with their fingernail and flies off, a la A Land Before Time. I was incredulous. I was thinking, make this a dream sequence. They still, you know, I was like at the very end thinking they can
and
still
then
pull
just
it back.
Close a book
like Dallas.
Yeah,
Jon Snow's going to wake up and say it was a dream all
accidental
along.
Waterfall rock falling on his head.
Woeful ending. Only way to rescue it was to have Bran turn into the Night King at the end of the new council, a la Thriller video. G.R.R. Martin has already said he might change the endings in the books.
That's why I'm going to read the books. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah.
That would be brilliant.
More bad language alert. Listener says I sum it up in one word. Shite. Is this generation's Falcon Crest or Dallas, says another one.
It's not. It's just EastEnders in different clothes. I mean, that's what people just don't understand.
It's a soap opera.
Yes, exactly. When people start slagging off, you know, people for watching soaps,
Jen.
Game of Thrones is exactly the
Jen
bloody
is
same.
Not.
The genesis of, ooh, the Wizard's Key and the foreign land of bloody blah is exactly like who owns the Queen Vic at whatever time. So get over yourselves, basically.
Okay. You've lost the flaws like Game of Thrones.
Yes. And I'm right.
They peaked at episode 3 with The Long Night. After that, it was just an attempt to wrap up all the loose ends. Last episode, a big disappointment. Sure, lots of people gave out about episode 3 on the basis they couldn't see it properly.
Exactly. Yeah, what episode 3? I can't even... There was nothing.
Hang on, I thought you defended it at the time.
No, I said it was very dark. Roll the clip. I actually said it was very dark. I couldn't see it. But on second watch, when I brightened up my screen, look, they made you go through... These are the ridiculous lengths that you had to go to enjoy it this season. And I hung in for episodes 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5. It lost me at 6. I'm dead and burying it. I'll never rewatch it again. I've moved on and I'm watching reruns of, you know, something ridiculous like The OC to just pick me back up again. I'm devastated.
I think it is a huge event for TV because ever since it has come out and in whatever the 9 years after, TV has changed so much that everything is so niche now that I think Game of Thrones is the last global TV phenomenon we'll ever see. I think that is the end of the monoculture. You're never going to get 80 million viewers worldwide watching the same show and invested in it in the same way.
Well, they'll never spend that money again.
There's a lot of people saying that actually in itself isn't an enormous number. That, you know, you watch a big football match, you'll have a billion people watching it.
Well,
every
that's
night.
The legal number. I mean,
yeah, this is it.
Like, come on,
you're not
piracy.
You're not going to have another 920 million watching it illegally.
Yeah, well, I think piracy will be the death of these type of shows in the future because it's so hard to make the money that they're justifying the spend on, you know, and rest in peace as well.
Okay, just the last couple of comments to finish this. What ending would be good enough? The ending was great. There's no other satisfying way to end it, says one listener. But Brian and Lockray said they ruined a great show. When you get writers from Lost, what do you expect?
Exactly.
You know,
there you
that's
go.
Actually a reasonable point because I remember feeling so damn cheated by all the time I wasted on Lost to get to that damn ending.
120 plus episodes. This one was 79. Like, yeah.
I'm telling you, stop hiring Benioff. Start the petition now. That's what 1 million people should
sign. The biggest disappointment was that they invested so much time building up each main character and then they closed them out in ways that made no sense. This is my daughter's complaint as well. It's like the writers watched a recap and wrote the last season.
There was no point for a lot of the main storylines that have been woven intricately throughout the seasons. They were just completely disregarded for no reason. Maybe being rushed. I can't see the future-proofing of the profitability of this show being a good enough reason to dismiss massive storylines that have been present since day one.
A collection of tongue-in-cheek smirks and hollow drama. That was all the Game of Thrones finale amounted to. An apt end to a season that, despite having an extra year of prep, felt like it was flung together in the Leaving Cert exam by a student whose prepared essay question didn't come up. In a word, farce. The showrunners Benioff and Weiss clearly had the cash in their accounts and one eye on the next project.
And I'm telling you, if they make two Wookiees have sex in Star Wars, I will go crazy.
If you look back at the cast interviews before this went out, before the final season even aired, they're all saying, did you enjoy filming? And they're all answering through gritted teeth and they won't diss the writers because they'll never work again. But if you look gently at their hands, they're tapping out, please don't watch it in Morse code.
And that's why everyone should be like Constant Wu now, who actually used swear words when her show, Fresh Off the Boat, got re-scheduled, like it actually got revived and it's brought back and she didn't want it to be and she unleashed on Twitter. And I think more actors should be that honest if they don't want a show to come back or the show's gone off the boil.
Yeah,
do
without
it. Walk away.
Fear of never working again because I wouldn't have watched it.
Let's talk about other things. Let's talk about
I'm
other
depressed
television.
Now. I'm depressed.
Let's move on and let's talk about Gentleman Jack.
Yes.
A.K.A. Ann Lister. This is What? With Suran Jones in it.
It is a Suran Jones and she is incredible, obviously. Now, the first episode was on last weekend, last Sunday, and it's from the excellent Sally Wainwright. She wrote Happy Valley and she did, you know, lots of episodes of Corrie and Last Tango in Halifax. And it's about Anne Lister, who was basically someone who came into a fortune back in the 19th century, who her uncle gave her basically a property, manor and a land. And she had to come back from years of global, you know, just going around the world and having lovely affairs with lots of women. So it's really about, she wrote this diary and it was an epic diary. And within it, it's just, you know, a very intense description of her affairs with women. And there is a lot of, I talk about this being the first out lesbian in that society. And it's really about living a life that's unbound by tradition and a woman attempting to free herself from and live her own truth at that time. So she has to come home to the UK and she's kind of forced to conform and be conventional, but she doesn't. And that's the greatest thing about it. Suran Jones plays this with just incredible swagger and she just has this unbelievable charisma that just bounces off the screen. And, you know, she's uncompromised and she intrigues the town. And more often than not, it's more about how they're trying to place her in the world. But it will get more and more intense as it goes on. I think last weekend's show was just to set you up. It's just your normal, you know, plot device. Yeah. To set all the characters up. But it is really interesting. And, you know, it's not like swashbuckling like Poldark, but it has all those ingredients to make it an incredibly good drama. And I think Suran Jones
is kind of... She wrote it before Fleabag, didn't she? There's a kind of a...
This is Sally Wainwright, so...
Yeah, but no, it was written before Fleabag, and there's a kind of a pieces to camera esque kind of style.
Oh yeah, it's nothing to do with Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but there is a break in the fourth wall kind of thing with the character. It's more like, you know, back in the day where you'd have like those epistolary, you know, novels like Pamela or stuff like that, when you're directing it to the audience. So that's what was really interesting about the book in the first place, to try and adapt it for TV. But I think in terms of like showing actual, you know, lesbianism on TV, there hasn't been something like this, which isn't kind of couched in fear, like the way even Tip of the Velvet was, even though that was super controversial.
And I remember a lot of it. I remember the controversy about a kiss in 1994,
Brookside.
25 years ago. Iconic kiss involving Anna Friel and Nicola Stevenson. Let's hear it.
I was really annoyed at you now. I felt so out of it in that gay bar. I just thought it'd make you feel as though we weren't alone.
And then tell him that lecturer about us.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have mentioned you to Chris without asking you first.
I don't want anyone to know about it. It was going to be our secret.
It just kind of slipped out.
But you told him your name.
It's not some sort of witch hunt. You can't be arrested for it. And I don't think they can give you the electric shock treatment either anymore.
Don't be funny.
No. I didn't mean it like that. I don't know if I am a lesbian. And if I am, well, I don't know how to conduct myself.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, is one of us supposed to act like a man or something?
Beth, I'm me. I couldn't start dressing up.
No, I didn't mean it. Well, I don't know what I'm talking about.
You're too young, Alison, to remember the fuss that caused the first kiss before the 9 p.m. watershed.
Well, first of all, thanks very much, Matt. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me on radio.
There's a controversy between two girls in baggy jumpers kissing in a hallway. You won't believe it.
Like. No, I do. I remember hearing about it and hearing about it in school and being told, you know, that's the reason why you should go home and watch it. Two girls kissed on TV. And it was such a big moment. And now, there, as you're saying, Jen, there are shows being made without that fear. They're raw and they're vulnerable. Derry Girls was just the same thing as well.
To say how much that captured like the imagination, like pop culture wise, Danny Boyle actually used that clip of Brookside in the opening ceremony of the Olympics.
Olympics in 2012,
which got a massive cheer because it was the first lesbian kiss before, well, it wasn't actually, it was the second lesbian kiss, but it was the first one before the watershed.
9 o'clock,
but
watershed.
I think the problem is we need more representation because there isn't enough, because lesbianism has been used by a trope, as a trope by, you know, patriarchal porn culture that it seemed it's shown as taboo or risque to have it on TV. And I think that's why you need more people apart from like straight white men in writers' rooms. You need a variety of people so you can have someone where it's not just centred on it being the only thing in someone's life.
Well, let's hear what Alison referred to the bit from Derry Girls.
Hi. Oh, it's crawled out from under its rock, has it? You should be ashamed of yourself.
I know. I'm sorry. It all just made me a bit nervous.
Everything makes you nervous, Claire. You're a walking cack attack.
I can't help that. It's the way God made me.
Michelle's running around saying it's her. That she wrote the story. That she's a wee lesbian. As if, like, there'd be more chance of it being you.
It is me.
No, I mean, I'd be less surprised if it was you.
It is.
No, it's not. But if it was...
Erin! It's me. I'm the wee... lesbian.
I so you are, Claire.
I'm not joking.
You're a lesbian.
I've never been brave enough to say it out loud before, but I think that's why I wrote this story, and then it all got too real, I got too scared, but now, well, you've made me realise it's all okay.
Don't blame me.
What?
You fancy gears?
Well, that's sort of an entry-level requirement, Erin.
I think I'm gonna boke.
Do you mind? I'm trying to come out here.
Well, don't. Don't come out. Go back in.
I don't want to go back in.
Well, I'm sorry, Claire, but I'm just not interested in you, not like that.
I'm not interested in you like that look of this stadium.
Oh, come off it.
Your arrogance is staggering, Erin.
Well, you know what else is staggering? Your gayness.
I really thought you'd understand.
That is brilliant, Alison, isn't it?
I just love that there was no weight of expectation for this Disney reaction of acceptance. It was so true to the time that it felt like you were watching something happening between two schoolgirls, you know, back in the day in Ireland. And even when she says the word lesbian, she doesn't quite say it. You know, it's just a different time, but it was acted
times.
And written so
yeah,
well.
But hang on, look at what's happening in Alabama. Tell us about this program, the children's cartoon Arthur. An episode won't be screened in Ireland because of a same-sex wedding in it.
Two rats are getting married, Ma. I mean, come on. It's the two cartoon rats. Are we
it's
really...
It's actually an aardvark and a rat.
Ridiculous.
Oh, it's because it's a mixed-race marriage. Yeah. Is that
mixed
the reason?
Mixed-race, same-sex. Yeah, mixed-race, same-sex marriage.
Yeah. Alabama Public Television is refusing to air the recent episode of the kids' cartoon Arthur because the same-sex wedding is going to violate their audience's trust, apparently, because kids are going to be way too shocked to see two cartoon animals get married. I mean, I just don't understand.
The program director said that the parents might have made a decision to have a different household and operation in terms of values, and they won't have had a chance to have that conversation first. But I mean, it's a big closet that he's hiding behind.
But also, it's just a wedding, and also it's a cartoon, and I nearly swore, but it is. So I mean, I don't understand how this is warping people's minds.
Robin Cashel says, "I remember that kiss," referring to Brookside. Yeah. How about the first interracial kiss between Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura?
Uhura. Yeah. Yeah, and then I mean, when you think about it, even like I mean, but it's slow. It's slow and steady. These things just do not happen enough, or you know. Often enough, there was a great episode of Master of None season one where Denise, who's Aziz Ansari's friend in it, and it's an episode called Thanksgiving, and it's about her coming out to her mom, who's played by Angela Bassett, amazing, through a succession of Thanksgivings and how hard it is, and all of her succession of girlfriends, and it's so touching and brilliant and deserves a watch.
We need to do our picks of the week. Alison, now that you've moved on from your Game of Thrones obsession and you'll have lots of different television to talk to us about, your pick of the week is one from Netflix. What is it?
Yeah, I've moved on. It's actually Dead to Me. That's how far I moved on I've gone. I'm going with The Wife. It's streaming on Netflix now. This is the one that stars Glenn Close. She won the Golden Globe and nominated for an Oscar for her role.
Oh, this is a movie rather than actually a series.
It's new this week. Yeah, it's one off. It's fabulous. I watched this kind of on a plane with an eye roll and nothing else to watch, and I've watched it twice since. It tells the story of a couple on a journey to Stockholm as he prepares to receive the Nobel Prize for Literature, but the trip causes the wife, played by Glenn Close, to do a lot of soul searching. Brilliant twists and turns, and I think it's some of the most powerful, honest acting between a couple that you're likely to see this year. So well worth a watch.
Your choice, Jennifer.
Mine, apart from Gentleman Jack, which is on Sunday 9 on BBC One, is What If, Netflix. It's out. It's on Netflix and it's out on Friday, and it's Renee Zellweger making her small screen kind of debut, and it's from the creator of Revenge, So it's really what you would expect from that kind of show. It's like a neo-noir morality series almost, and it's about focusing on the consequences of unexpected choices. So in this first series, it's really like Indecent Proposal, the remix. Renée Zellweger is helping out like this financially constrained couple, and they find themselves in this ethically dubious situation. So basically, it's kind of like, it's an anthology series, so it's kind of like Tales of the Unexpected if David Fincher had made it. So, I mean, it's just, be prepared. It's more like a realistic American horror story.
Okay, we have to leave it there. Jennifer Gannon and Alison Healy. Actually, quite a few people are texting in about Chernobyl on Sky Atlantic. We'll talk more about that next week. We have talked about it previously, but we will come back and chat about it again.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.